Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, January 21st. I'm Ray Graff. Genealogist Tracy Scrabbit returns today to maybe help you solve the mysteries of your family history, or at least get you pointed in the right direction. Now, Tracy's only on this show a couple times a year. She drives a very long way to be here, and it's always a popular topic. So if you've been barking up your family tree, call early. 800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551 if you have a genealogy question. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org or 800-348-2551. Tracy Scrabbit, genealogy. Your calls coming up right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Here today to answer your genealogy questions is Tracy Scrabbit. Tracy is a professional archivist and genealogist. Tracy holds a BA in art from the University of Hawaii at Manoa, where her areas of study were in the visual arts of glass and metal sculpture and the Hindu, Buddhist, and Islamic art history of South and Southeast Asia. She holds an MA in museum studies from Johns Hopkins University, where her areas of interest were in museum ethics, material culture, and accessibility. She also holds a Master of Library Science from Kent State University with a specialty in archives and special collections librarianship. You have a question? Genealogy question today? Call us. 800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. Tracy Scrabbit, welcome back. It's been a while. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good. The drive over from Eastern Mass wasn't too bad.
I can't believe it, that how lucky I am and our listeners are that you schlep all these hours to be on this show a couple times a year. And I tell you something, I'm grateful for it. So thank you for being here.
Well, I'm always happy to come by and answer any questions that I can.
Well, you ready for a stupid one?
Sure.
Okay, here's one I was thinking about, and you maybe have no idea. How far back, how many generations back is the most, how far back has it been verified? In other words, how many generations has someone verified, okay, this is in my family tree?
Well, I haven't gone back that many generations, but from watching, you know, like television shows, you know, like Who Do You Think You Are, which is in the UK.
Yeah.
They can go back, you know, 10 generations, sometimes more, but it's because they have better records than we do. So that's really what it comes down to, is when you're looking for records, it's how well were the records kept. I mean, when you're in a country like, say, the UK, where they have records going back to, you know, the 9th, 10th, 11th century, our country, anything before the 1600s is difficult.
Yeah.
You know, when we first landed. So anything, you know, so it really depends on how good the recording is and how well they kept the records. I mean, there's some countries like, you know, like in India and Korea, where keeping genealogy is something that, you know, it could go back even more. Like I've seen documentaries about, you know, like Korea, where they can go back to, you know, the 6th century.
Wow.
With tracing families, because it's part of their culture to record, you know, the names of all the people in the family. So it really depends on how good the record, how well preserved the records are.
How about the ancient Romans? I'll tell you why. This is why I was thinking about this inane question. My grandmother always said, oh, my father's side goes back to ancient Rome. How are you going to verify that?
No, I think that's a little too far to go back a few thousand years. And I think that the interesting thing about Rome is that, you know, there a lot of what we think of as our heritage is more the political than it is the actual people. You know, like the Greeks and the Romans created a lot of what we think of as the democratic process and the idea of the state. And so a lot of us, you know, there's a reason why if you go down to D.C., so many of the monumental buildings there look like temples, because we're what we're doing. Oh, put my art historian hat on.
Oh, I like it.
But a lot of what we do when we, you know, when we invoke the Greeks and the Romans is not so much that we want to claim genetic heritage from them, but we want to claim cultural heritage from them. You know, I mean, you look at the statue of, you know, justice in most, you know, state buildings. What is she wearing? She's wearing a Greek dress.
Right.
You know, she's usually wearing a helmet that in a way looks like the helm of Athena. You know, I think it's too far back. I mean, and also, like, at a certain point, like, there's this joke, you know, like, people go, oh, I'm descended from Charlemagne. Well, if you're white and you have a monochrome of European, I shouldn't say white, I should say Caucasian, but
whatever.
If you have one, you know, an iota of European heritage, you are related to Charlemagne, because Charlemagne lived in the 500s.
Right.
It, you know, like, or people talk about, you know, I'm descended from the original, you know, the people who came on the Mayflower. Well, you are, but there's, what, over 16 million people now that are descended from those original settlers. So, you know, it becomes so exponential as each generation goes on that at some point you can...
all related.
You can find some way to be related to almost anyone who shares some of your genetics. I mean, it would be harder for, say, someone whose genetics is mostly from, you know, like England and the UK, to find some kind of connection to someone who grew up in the Raj, you know, in India. But, you know, it's just genetics spreads so much more quickly than we think of, because we're so used to thinking about just our families. You know, it's for example, I was rewatching Schindler's List recently, and at the end it says, this was in the 90s, right? So Schindler's helping the Jews, it was in the 40s. So the movie was in the 90s. So 50 years later, so 1,100 people became over 6,000 people in the course of 50 years.
Yeah.
So imagine if you then look at that exponential growth over 100 years, 1,000 years.
Yeah. I don't know where you stand. You're a paper and records person, at least in our conversations. I don't know where you stand on this whole DNA business. But if you had DNA data, does that increase the amount of time you can go back?
Well, I think it can give you clues about where your tree goes, for example, you know, I don't know very much about my own family, but, you know, looking at my genetic profile, I have, you know, a lot more German in my genetic profile than I do Dutch, but the only grandparent that I know of is Dutch and not German. So at some point, but I don't know who they are. So, you know, or, you know, you might find someone who, you know, for example, they're South Korean, for example, but there are a lot of Chinese people in South Korea.
Yeah.
And so what a lot of them will find is that they do have, you know, they don't know anyone in their family who is, you know, not Korean. But there is that in the genetics, you know. So I think what it can do is it can open you up to looking at what are other possibilities of where I came from, you know. And not everyone knows also, you know, not everyone knows everything that makes them up, you know. And it might only be 1 or 2%, but, I mean, maybe like that German is 4 or 5 or 6 generations removed. I don't know them. Maybe my Dutch grandfather didn't know them. You know?
So I hear you.
That's the thing. It's like what genetics can give us is, you know, the knowledge that we all came from somewhere else. You know, we like to think about I'm from this place because we are very, we can thank the French for a lot of it. And, but, you know, what we think about the idea of nation states, you know, the French or the Germans or the British, when they went out and during the, you know, the time of imperialism, they created the idea of states.
Yeah.
You know, so you look at places like Cambodia and, you know, and Thailand, they share a similar, you know, the Khmer culture was in both of those places, you know, so now they are two different states, but they are both able to go and say, look at this amazing culture that is part of who we are.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think that is something that we need to put into context is, and we look at things like being Polish, for example. Like my husband's family is Polish, but the people they came from didn't live in what is now modern Poland. They came from what is now modern Ukraine.
That's so interesting.
But they were still Polish people. But the idea of what was Poland, where did the Polish people live, it changes over time. And so we can't always, you know, narrow ourselves down to it's just this border that I can see on a modern map, because your people may have lived outside of those borders in a time when those borders didn't exist or were not important to them.
Tracy Scrabbit, are you pleased that you did a DNA workup, or did it open more doors than you can even possibly figure out how to close?
No, I mean, it was interesting to me. It was, it confirmed most of what I knew, which I'm predominantly South Asian. I mean, it helped me to kind of get a better idea of where my people are from, you know, and there are some branches of the family that, you know, like a lot of the Dutch ones, I don't know any of them, you know, but, you know, you can get hints about people and find out a little bit more about, you know, where you're from. And if it's something that you're interested in pursuing, it can give you a, you know.
Well, listen, you have German ancestry. I have a lot of it. So we're probably related. You know what? We have the same general attitude. And I think we're cousins. 800-348-2551 is our number. Genealogy Today with Tracy Scrabbit. We'll be back. We'll hit the phones. Lovely music there at 800-348-2551. Don't forget the lockbox is open right now. The fun drive begins on Monday, February 3rd. We are trying to shorten that drive, and you can help. All you got to do is go to WAMC.org right now and make a secure online pledge. No minimum. If you got 5, 10, 15, whatever you can afford, this station needs you. And every dollar we raise shortens the drive. So there's that, WAMC.org. Our guest today is Tracy Scrabbit. It's genealogy on the program, 800-348-2551. And let's begin in Clinton Corners. John, you're on.
Hey, hello, and thank you for having me on.
You bet.
So I had a DNA workup done, okay, and I was actually born in Holland, so I'm Dutch too. But the interesting thing was, it showed basically England, Germany, Scotland, and so on. But I know from a relative who did some research that there is an Italian some branch in my family. I had a grandmother or great-great-grandmother named Bianchi, and that never showed up in the DNA thing. Can you explain that?
Well, there's a couple of things. So one, DNA is always an evolving process. Like every 6 months or so, I'll get a notice from Ancestry saying, we've refined our algorithm.
Ah.
You know, because really what they do is they look at all of these Ancestry tests, you know, and they'll say, oh, we have 2% from this place. And then maybe 6 months later, they reevaluate and they go, no, it's not this place, it's this other place. Like I used to be, I used to, you know, for like 6 months, I was kind of a Viking because it said Norway. And then 6 months later, they're like, no, it's not Norwegian, it's Cornwall. So there's a couple of things. It's one is it could be that they simply have not refined their algorithm enough. The other thing is that it could be, you know, maybe it is correct, but the person is not genetically Italian. So, you know, my dentist is Mexican, but he's English mm-hmm. because his family came and settled in, you know, in the 1800s, there was some deal with Mexico, with Spain, and the English established a colony there. And after the English left, he just stayed. So he's Mexican in every way that you can be Mexican.
Right.
But his ancestry is English. So it could be one of those two things. It could be that they have not refined the testing enough, or it could be that it's someone who is culturally Italian because maybe they've lived there. That family has lived there mm-hmm. for a long time, but they're not genetically Italian. And I think that's something interesting to think about as well, is that you don't always have to be genetically tied to a place to be part of that place,
John,
and to call it your place.
Okay. What do you think?
Well, that kind of explains it.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551. It's Tracy Scrabbit today, genealogy on the program. We'll go to Albany. And Dan, you're on.
Yes, thank you. Concerning documents, generations ago, they used to produce for weddings and baptisms elaborate certificates and frame them and all. And I have a number of them, but the ink is faded beyond legibility. Is there a way to reconstitute the trace elements that are left of the ink?
You would probably have to go to a document conservation program. It's not something that I would advise doing at home. I would not even do it without a proper preservation lab.
Huh.
So it is something that is it's an incredibly delicate process. I know that I have seen where, you know, in documentaries and stuff, there are some scientists who are able to use, like, different kinds of scanning microscopes to pick up the elements that used to be in the ink that are
right.
faded, but it's still in the paper. But you want to look for a document conservation company to do that work for you.
It couldn't be cheap, could it?
Well, I think it depends on the document. And what it is that needs to be done, but you could at least, you know, reach out to, you know, do some research to find like a local document conservation, or you could look at there are a number of different, you know, if there are any schools in the area, they might also be able to, you know, like I know like the Rare Book School in Boston, maybe they might have some ideas about, you know, who you could go to for conservation and preservation of documents. But it's definitely not something that you would ever want to do at home, or you'd risk damaging the documents.
You got that, Dan?
Yes, thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot for the call. It's 800-348-2551 if you have a genealogy question for Tracy Scrabbit. And let's see. By the way, how long did it take you to warm your car up today, huh? That was something.
Oh, yeah, it's... Why is it so cold in Albany?
Polar vortex. It's not in Boston?
No, it's like 15, 20 degrees warmer. At least it was yesterday.
It was really bad today. This email from Jay. My great-grandfather, Dennis Sullivan, came to this country around 1916. Where would you start to find the lineage of such a common Irish name?
Well, I think that you could start with passenger lists. That would be the easiest thing to kind of trace where they came from, if they, you know, if they stated what town they were from. The other thing I would look at is, are there any records that you can locate, any vital records? Normally, if at least with American records, when you get married, you have to put down where you were from. Originally.
Right.
Because a lot of times, depending on the records, if you look for naturalization records, those will sometimes name the place, but it really depends on the time. If the really early records might not, they might just say a country, or but you know, depending on the court, it might say, "Oh, I'm from this county." You know, the other thing to look at is to look at the name, because very much like the Italians, the Irish also had surnames that were based, like you would find, let's just say as an example, oh, the Sullivans, most of those are in County Cork, or, you know, the O'Malleys, most of those are in, you know, in County Limerick, or, you know, so they're very, a lot of times, if you, you know, if you look at the records, and I don't do a lot of Irish genealogy, but you can certainly, I'm sure there are a lot of resources online, that the a lot of times the last name will give you some idea of what part of the country they were from.
So interesting.
And you can also, I would also think about reaching out to maybe the Irish National Archive if you're looking for Irish records, or the British National Archive if you're looking for Northern Irish records, because they probably have a better idea of how to, like, how do, when the name is common, because this is a problem they're dealing with all the time. If you do have a common name, what are some of our resources that we have to help you figure that out? But I think a lot of it is going to be vital records, maybe passenger lists, incoming passenger lists, but also embarkation lists. So in Europe, look at the records of them leaving, and where did they say they were leaving from?
I got a great kick out of looking at the census going back to turn of the century and around that time for Brooklyn and later Long Island, and just finding out, A, just how inaccurate some of these are. I mean, I guess it was just normal people went and canvassed areas for the census. But so there are mistakes.
Well, I think that the issue with a lot of census, you know, is the Census Bureau would hire enumerators, and the enumerators would be given the, you know, like an enumeration district that, let's say it's, you know, 100 houses. Now, if you're in rural Kansas, 100 houses, that, you know,
it's a good geographic area.
Yeah. But if you're in somewhere like Long Island, each of those houses might be 10 families or 20 mm-hmm. families, because you're, you know, so it was a lot of times what would happen is they would go to the door. Whoever answered the door would answer the questions.
Yeah.
And maybe you might know the correct answer, or maybe you might not know the correct answer. But the idea was to get the best amount of information that you could, but there was no fact checking. So if you were living, say you were a boarder or something like that, right? There were a lot of boarding houses, and the census taker comes to the door. The enumerator says, you know, that Ray Graff, where is he from? And you go, oh, you know, he's Dutch. Maybe you're not Dutch. Maybe you're German, but that's the answer that gets written down. So it wasn't always accurate information, because it wasn't always given by people who knew the correct information.
But doesn't that make your life and your vocation a little irritating at times, frustrating?
Well, it can be frustrating, but when you think about it, the amount of information, the idea of the census was to create a general demographic, right? It was not for the what we use it for now, which is precise genealogy. Mm. It was about, you know, getting a better handle on who was living in the country.
Yeah.
How many people? What were their income classes? Like, if you go to the Census Bureau, they have, you know, an entire website on their historian section where what the Census Bureau did after they took these censuses is they created demographics, because that was what was important. How many Italians? Were they concerned with Northern Italians, Southern Italian? Maybe not, but they wanted Italians. How many men over 50? How many women of childbearing age? How many children? Like that,
yeah.
It's the census was supposed to be very big picture. They tried to be as accurate as they could, but they understood it was not going to be perfect. But if they could get 90% of the way there, it would provide useful information that would help the government to offer services that were necessary And that's really what the census was. It was like, okay, we need to know how many people need a food program. How many people, you know, how much extra housing do we need to build? That's what the census was really for, was allowing lawmakers to get an idea of what were the needs of the people living in their, you know, their demographic, their areas.
Here I was thinking it was about taxation, but I guess...
Well, yes, too. But then again, you know, if I know, you know, there are 50 men that need to be taxed in this area, it doesn't matter where they're from,
yeah.
Not really.
Oh, you make a point. Tracy Scrabbit is our guest today. It's 800-348-2551 if you have a genealogy question. And let's go to Williamstown, Massachusetts. Steve, you're up.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I have been told that the Scottish genealogical records are much better organized than the Irish. And the reason I'm asking about this is I have completed my genealogical research in Ireland, found the family farm with a relative living there. We've gone all as far back in Ireland as we could go. But there's one character who we suspect emigrated from Scotland. We could not find him anywhere in the Irish records. My question is, would it be worth my while, and can I get online and go to the Scottish ancestral services and start digging?
Well, I think the best thing to do, which is always free, would be to contact the if Scotland has its own archive, which, you know, it is part of the UK, but they may have their own national archive, is to contact them and to pose that question to them. Let them know what you found. Let them know what it is that you are looking for, and they can give you a better idea of what records they might have that might help you bridge that gap between, you know, when your ancestor might have lived in, or your family member might have lived in Scotland and when they moved to Ireland. Some might be online. Some are not. I mean, it really depends on the archive, but it doesn't cost anything to just email.
Yeah.
You know, the archive, and say, I have this question, is something, you know, because like you said, you know, they have much better records, and they may be able to say, hey, yeah, we have something like that, or we can at least help you get started. You can look at these resources, or we have resources that we can search for you. So it never hurts to ask. And I mean, I've never encountered an archive that charges you just for asking the question.
Are they generally nice, or are there some countries where they say, will you stop? There are 8 zillion Irish Americans. Will you stop bothering us?
No, in my experience, you know, if you work at an archive, your part of your mission is to make the records that you are preserving accessible to people. Because if they are not accessible and people aren't using them, what are those records for? What are you doing the work for if you are not keeping them available for people who want to research them? So I've never encountered an issue. I've also had good luck with, you know, like cultural societies. You know, like I had a question a while back about, you know, records of people from the displacement camp, the displaced persons camps after the war.
Yeah.
And I must have called like 4 or 5 different you know, Jewish heritage institutions trying to track down where these records might be from the camps. And every one of them was more than willing to answer your questions. So look at also, you know, Irish historical societies in the area and see if any of them have any ideas, because maybe they've worked with people who are having the same issue that you're having, and they might be able to advise you on how to proceed with your research.
Steve, you want to follow up very quickly before the break?
No, Bob. Thank you very much for that information.
Well, thanks a lot for the call. Let's take that break. 800-348-2551 is our number. If you would like to talk to the one and only Tracy Scrabbit, who's here today to answer your genealogy questions, 800-348-2551. You can email voxpop@wamc.org. We'll check the email bag in a minute. Mm-hmm. lockbox is open. Won't pester you. WAMC.org. We do need your pledge if you can make it. It'll shorten the drive. WAMC.org. Make that pledge and thank you in advance. It is genealogy today on Vox Pop. Tracy Scrabbit joins us before we hit the email bag again. You know, in general, in your philosophy, in your opinion, are humans, are people too concerned with the past and where we have been than moment-to-moment reality?
I think it's on a person-by-person basis. I mean, there are some people who are, you know, deep into studying genealogy and, you know, their whole, you know, it's all about that. And but I think, I don't think there's anything wrong with wanting to know where you came from. I mean, that's part of what I do. But I think part of it is also, you know, thinking about what am I leaving behind? Like, what am I doing that is going to be a legacy for my family? You know, it's a great thing to know where you came from. But you are also, you have to think that you are also part of the history of your family. You're living the that what is going to be the history for the next generation.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but I think it can also create an idea where we are so welded to what our history was. You know,
you create a myth for yourself.
Exactly. You go, oh, you know, my family is this, you know, from this country, and this is what we are. You know, but people move. I mean, that's, you know, that is the truth of it. You know, countries change, the borders change, people migrate and immigrate from all, you know, they end up somewhere. I mean, it's not just America that thinks of itself as the land of immigrants. Every country is full of immigrants, you know, and the place that you land is not always the place where you started. And so I think that when you're doing research, you have to open yourself up to the possibility that there is a story. It may be that there's a story in your background that you don't know about, whether it's because the story was never told or there was a reason why it was concealed. You know, we can't judge what happened in the past. You know, and we can't pick and choose what we want to learn about or accept about ourselves,
yes.
You know, because that's part of the thing. When you go and you do your genetic test or you look into your family tree, you have to be willing to accept that it may not always be bright and sunshine and the things that you are happy about. You know, you see that a lot with, you know, people in this country who find out that they have, you know, ancestors who participated in the slave trade.
Right.
You know, and that's a part of your history, but that is a part of your history. Does that have anything to do with you and the life that you're living now, however many, you know, 150 years later, however long it is since that happened? That's for you to decide, but it's not always sunshine in the past. You have to be willing to accept that there may be mysteries and there may be dark elements there as well when you go looking.
Tracy Scrabbit is our guest today. It's genealogy. You've been at this game a while. Does it still light your fire? Do you still like the mystery, the detective work?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's still interesting. The thing that really interests me is, you know, seeing how much more is being opened up about places in other, you know, other areas. You know, a lot of these companies that are doing, that are digitizing records, you know, and making them available to people, you know, they're going into, it's not just European records now. You know, you're being able to go further afield. You're being able to go down to South America. You know, there's a big push to expand and make records for more people available, which I think is really interesting.
Okay, here's one we talked about. I was talking about my grandmother bragging about, oh, we go back to ancient Rome. Here's one from Celeste in Oneonta. Family lore in my husband's family is that he is a descendant of the illegitimate offspring of Italian King Victor Emmanuel II and the wet nurse who served the royal family. Is there a way to find out if this lore is true, for instance, through blood work or DNA testing? And that's from Celeste in Oneonta.
Honestly, I don't know, because I don't know what kind of genetic information is available for people that long ago, but also people of that social status. In terms of physical records, I would say probably not. Illegitimate children were very rarely acknowledged, and if they were not acknowledged, there was no paper trail.
Yeah.
You know? So I think that's something that would be very difficult to explore, but it might be interesting.
All right, this one's from Jeff in Rotterdam Junction, and then we'll go back to the phones. My grandmother on my father's side was born around 1900 in New Jersey, was shipped to Hungary at age 6, returned to New York around 1920. She was a citizen, and I was told had a passport, which is lost. Is there an online searchable database of early 1900 citizens and hopefully exists and exits and returns to the U.S.? We think we know her original, not Americanized name, and hope to find some facts about her. Please note that there are no genetic relations we have found on that side of the family.
Well, in terms of leaving, I would say look at any Hungarian records that exist. In the United States, there was less of an interest in people leaving the country than people coming in, mm-hmm. which is why you find most of the passenger lists are immigration records instead of emigration records.
Mm.
But in a lot of the European countries, you know, for them, your leaving is their immigrating. So what I would say is look for immigration records in Hungary if those exist. But I would also, based on her age at the time of departure, I would look for any relatives she would have traveled with, because I know in the early part, a lot of times they would not, some liners did not put the name of the child. They would just say Ray Graf, daughter,
right.
Son, daughter. So you could look at the age. It would say daughter 6 years, but it wouldn't say the name. So sometimes you have to look at who would she have been traveling with.
Gotcha.
In order, you know, when you're looking for someone who is a minor, that will help give you an idea. So I would say immigration records into Hungary for that time period, and then passenger lists coming into the country for the return.
Tracy Scrabbit is our guest today. It's genealogy. The number is 800-348-2551. Let's go back to the phones to Albany. And Annette, you're on.
Hello.
Hi.
I just had a question. Can you hear me?
Sure. Yep.
Okay. In terms of looking at genealogy for people of African descent, do you know if there's any work being done generally on folks that are probably from West Africa, East Africa, that people here might be able to trace back? European.
Ancestry has been doing a lot of work.
Ancestry.com.
Yeah, Ancestry.com. Okay. They have a big presence in Africa, trying to get genetic information there. There was actually a really interesting record, an episode of I think it was Finding Your Roots. It was Blair Underwood, and he ended up going to Cameroon to meet distant cousins.
Hmm.
And the cousin was saying that, like, you know, they live in this small village, and the people from Ancestry basically came and said, hey, you know, we have a lot of people in America who don't know where they came from. We're trying to help them. Would you be willing to give samples of your DNA so that we can create this database? And they said, sure. And they never thought that, like, they were not looking for people. But they thought, we just want to help, you know. So I know Ancestry does it. I don't know if any of the other, I don't know what the process is for other, you know, like 23andMe or any right. of those other things. But I know for sure they've
been... of the others, yeah.
Yeah, they, for sure they have been working really hard to try to find, you know, help people find their roots, because they do understand that in America, a lot of us have lost that. I mean, there are very few people in America.
Yeah.
Maybe the people descended from the Gullah people of South Carolina, because that they stayed together. But a lot of us, we can't, you know, like, I mean, I'm not from America. I'm from South America, but my grandfather is the son of a slave, and he doesn't have any idea where he's from. I mean, genetics tells me West Africa.
Right.
You know, but he yeah. didn't know.
Yeah,
but
generally.
You know, and he was, you know, so there are a lot of company. There are at least, I know of at least Ancestry, you know, they're working hard to try to get this genetic information to help people, you know, like Americans who often don't know what their cultural heritage is, to try to help them find where they're from.
Annette.
Yes.
You want to follow up?
Hello.
No,
those are definitely websites to look at, because we have seen that people have, you know, various backgrounds, European as well as African. So this is good to look on that side. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. Tracy Scrabbit is our guest today. And let's go to Clifton Park. Christy, you're on.
Hi. My question is really about the accuracy of records. I have done a lot of research, primarily on my father's side, but on my mother's side of the family, there's just things that are actually inaccurate. Like, they are reporting that my uncle was the same as my grandmother's spouse. Like, it's just not correct. And I don't know how to go about fixing it with the record that I saw anyway came from FamilySearch.org. So what I'm trying to figure out is, how do I get them to correct the inaccuracies that are there, especially when I don't have anything other than, you know, my mother is still alive to prove that, like, hey, you got the lineage wrong. How would I go about trying to correct that is the first part of my question.
Well, I think it really depends on what it is that you're trying to correct. Are you trying to correct a family tree, or are you trying to correct an actual document?
It's the tree, because they have the wrong lineage between my grandmother and her children, who were all deceased except for my mother before her. Well, so they, like, reported it just inaccurate. I think part of the issue is that my grandfather and my grandmother's first son, which would have been my uncle, they had the same exact name. And there was several other ancestors that had their name, too. So the repeating of the name, I think, presents a little bit of a challenge. You know, in getting it right.
Well, I think the one thing to remember is that FamilySearch doesn't create those family trees. Those are all created by members. So if the information is incorrect, it's because whoever created that family tree and made it public for people to look at has the incorrect information. So I think what you would need to do is see if you can determine who created that family tree, and see if you can get the information changed there. But FamilySearch itself, it only makes the records available. It does not make definitive links between the records. But in regards to records, like, say, for example, you know, you find a census record and the name is spelled wrong. There's nothing that you can do about that. Historical records are, you know, historical records are preserved exactly as they were created. So, like, even when you look at court records, like naturalization records, you know, if someone may have reported the wrong birth year or the wrong birth date, that those can't be changed. Any historical record, that record cannot be changed. But something like a family tree that you might find on Ancestry or Family Search, those are generated by users, not by the site itself. So you would just need to see if you could contact the person who created that and work with them to get that changed. But it's not information that's generated by FamilySearch itself.
Gotcha. Christy, thanks for the call. Let's go quickly to Troy. Tim, you're on with Tracy Scrabbit.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I had a friend who was a doctoral candidate who was studying genealogy, and she was saying that, I guess, the algorithms that all the different sites use, there's not a standardized version of it. And I was told that if you have, if you're like a Native American and you have minority benefits, the government, based off of those test results, can actually strip you of your benefits, even though I guess the government also does not have a standardized algorithm that they use to recognize it. Is there any truth in that? And if so or if not, is the government getting close to sticking with an algorithm to actually identify with people?
Fascinating question.
You know, as far as I know, the government is not doing any work in genetics in the way that companies like, you know, like
23andMe,
like 23andMe or Ancestry is doing. I have not done a lot of work with the Native community, but from my understanding is, at least for the Native Americans that I know, is they are, you are either on the roll or you're not on the roll.
Huh.
You know, and okay. So I don't know if, you know, like, you know, like, if you're on the roll, if you're part of the tribe, they're able to get benefits. Like, I have a friend who is, you know, Plain Salish, and he, by the tribe, he has enough blood quanta to be Plain Salish, but his daughter is not. So he is, you know, there. I mean,
right.
She's his daughter, but she does not have enough blood quanta to qualify for inclusion in the tribe. So I don't know.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that, as far as I know, is mostly handled within the tribes, and whether or not
right.
the tribe is recognized and has, if it has federal recognition, they are open to having benefits, but they're not, you know. So I think, as far as I know, it's something that is mainly handled between the tribes and the government, whether
okay.
you are, you know.
Right.
All right, Tim, thanks a lot for the call. We only have about 90 seconds here. This is an interesting email from Bruce in Plainfield. Regarding your discussion at the start of the show, if, like me, you have English ancestors and you could trace your genealogy back to specific English ancestors, chances are good, in my experience, you'll be able to find royal ancestors using sites like FamilySearch. Having found such ancestors, certain lines will often go back a couple thousand years. However, at some point, it clearly becomes speculative or even completely made up. The most interesting part to me was when long lines of royal families in the British Isles suddenly claimed minor biblical figures in their family tree. It's clearly seeming to be absurd to think that 2,000 years ago, people were migrating from the Middle East to the British Isles and then immediately marrying into high-status families, but fascinating that royal families would insert this into their ancestry.
No, I mean, I think when you think about it, it completely makes sense, right? I mean, the you know, for example, when we talk about, you know, like if anyone watched The Crown, right? There's that episode where, you know, Elizabeth is talking to her mother and she's not sure about being the queen. And the queen basically says, you are the queen because God has mandated. Like, you know, you didn't get elected, you were chosen. And so there's this idea with a lot of royal families that it is, they are royal because it is a divine, they have been, it's,
yeah,
I can't think of the word, vocabulary is escaping me, but the divine has said to them, you are worthy of being the ruling class. So, you know, it would make sense that at some point they would want to tie it back to these biblical figures who are, you know, you read the book and, you know, touched
right.
by the divine, so you can make sense that eventually someone will want to say, oh yeah, I'm descended from David, the queen of, you know, the king of the Israelites, you know, but it makes sense because it's a mandate, that's the word, you know, that a lot of royalty lives with the idea that their right to rule and their right to govern is a divine mandate.
I think we'll have to leave it there, Tracy Scrabbit. This was so much fun, as always. We'll see you in about 6 months, right?
Yep.
Okay, well, thanks for coming. Support comes from the Albany Pine Bush Preserve, presenting Pine Bush Perspectives, a juried photo exhibit on display through February, both outside on the trail and inside the Discovery Center, albanypinebush.org. Thanks again to the great Tracy Scrabbitt for being here today. Thanks for listening. We will do genealogy in about 6 months or so. I can't remember the exact date. Thanks for the calls. Sorry if we didn't get to yours. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer, who clearly is descended from royal stock. Clearly. Peter Hughes screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's Stamps und Coins with David Tripp and Bob Scott. We'll see you tomorrow at 2.